You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Start off with your name and what you do at Knife Games.
Yeah, hi, I'm Thomas Barrer, and I'm an indie game developer from a fine arts background. I'm a co-founder of Knife Games, which is a small team of part-time indie game devs. I'm a sort of co-director, co-writer, art lead, I guess, because when you get teams of this size, everyone kind of like has 3 to 7 jobs that they do.
Naturally.
But yeah, so that's my kind of like focus.
How long has FNIF been around for?
We were kind of founded around 2018 because we were making music videos together as a little like group of artist friends. And then we saw that the New Zealand Film Commission were offering research and development grants for interactive projects. And we're like, oh, music videos, they're just like video games. We could do that. Which, you know, that's definitely not true, but we went for it anyway. And we were really lucky to get chosen by them to be supported financially and also with mentorship. So we kind of, yeah, grew out of a funding whim.
I feel like that's a very unique thing that happens in Aotearoa with like a sometimes half decent funding body. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people right now listening who are just kind of like, oh, well, the government just like plugged a whole bunch of money into video games last week, so I guess that's a new discipline that we're going to go for.
Yeah, I do wonder about that too. I mean, it's there's a lot of, you know, structures and frameworks around it. So there's certainly, you know, barriers to cross in terms of like, they're not just going to chuck money at projects without an expectation that you will like deliver on the needs of what the grant is. But I do think we are really lucky here that in some sort of facets, a lot of artists can find support in some ways. I know internationally, people that I've spoken to in game dev are like, oh, wow, like, you know, you have things like that available. But then, of course, there are other countries that have even more developed incubators than we do. So I think we've got room to grow, but we do have some really good opportunities there for people who want to get into that interactive kind of screen industry space.
Yeah, totally. So you guys have kind of started off. I'll quickly talk about sort of the main project that you guys have been going on for a few years now. What can you tell me about Shelf Life?
Shelf Life was sort of like, Shelf Life is kind of like our baby. So in many ways, it was like, it was one of those classic mistakes of biting off more than you can chew early on. But the gist of the story is that it's kind of a LGBTQIA+ focused, art school detective game. So it's gone through a few different stages, but it's always sort of stayed true to that experience. Because, you know, we're all semi-narcissistic and wanted to like write some kind of cathartic thing about how our team mostly went through art school, right? So we were, you know, very original. But yeah, it's a kind of queer focused art school game about kind of like incidents that have occurred on a sort of like very deranged and evangelical art school campus. And it's kind of, I think it over time, it's sort of like morphed and changed. And if anything, shrunk rather than grown. We let it grow for a while unchecked, and we made like a 50-minute demo for it. And we were like, oh, it's interesting. We spent a bit of time making this and it's not quite how we imagined it. So luckily for us, that was a really good milestone to get a lot of feedback, to get a lot of mentorship and a lot of redirecting to point us in a sort of more like logistically sensible direction towards getting it finished. So this year we've been, you know, really smashing it out and cleaning it up. But that's our focus is on queer narrative games. So that was sort of like our first foray into that.
Yeah, I feel like without like coming off too biased as a quote unquote journalist, the idea of like a queer mystery art school game is basically just playing exactly to my niche of media. It's great.
I love it. I'm definitely self-involved enough to want to make exactly the kind of thing I want to play I know a lot of people probably want to do that. I guess luckily there's a few holes in the market for this kind of thing, maybe.
Yeah, totally, especially in Aotearoa and its small but regardless growing game scene.
Mm.
Yeah, I suppose that kind of brings us on to the most recent project that you guys have come out with, which is definitely remaining on this trend of kind of like nostalgia-based late 2000s queer vibes with Small Town Emo. What can you tell me about this project?
So Small Town Emo is kind of like, to go back to what I was saying before, a lot of creators often make the mistake of biting off more than they can chew when they get into a sort of like long-term project. So the idea with Small Town Emo was, okay, what's something that like we can make and actually get it done? You know, what's something that has limitations built into it that's going to stop it from expanding beyond the realm of being able to reel it in and actually finish it? So the idea of making a game for Nintendo Game Boy as like a homebrew was kind of like, you know, already there floating around. And then obviously our kind of focus being on queer narrative games, it seemed really logical to make a sort of LGBTQIA plus focused story for that medium. Small Town Emo specifically follows the story of Ken, who's like a 17-year-old emo in the mid-2000s who has a kind of requited / unrequited crush on his goofy best friend. And the game itself is kind of just like a day in the life. Sometimes that genre of game is called like a walking sim. Mm. So and essentially you kind of play as this character, you kind of go through these sort of small town New Zealand locations, solve some really simple puzzles, talk to characters, make a few dialogue choices. It's a pretty linear game. And the idea is that you're kind of just exploring the experience of like a queer like teen crush and maybe what that felt like in the 2000s. So there's definitely that kind of like semi-autobiographical thing coming from it. And I was thinking a lot about, you know, what it was like to grow up, because I'm from Blenheim originally, from Marlborough, so totally have that had that small town mildly closeted like weird experience to draw from.
Yeah, and I mean part of that is also, I mean, there's so much so many interesting things to draw on about this title, but one of the core things that spoke to me was the utilization of creating a homebrew Game Boy game. Did you grow up with this handheld, or is it kind of something that you've looked back on?
Yeah, I had a Game Boy, like a kind of bootleg Game Boy that my mum brought back for me from like a business trip. And I think it was the first like games console or games experience that I ever had. So it was kind of like a kind of bootleg Game Boy from Singapore that had like 1,001 games on it. And a lot of them were kind of strange, like mistranslated or homebrew or kind of like bootleggy versions of popular titles. So there were like kind of weird, not quite Pokemon games on it and things like that. And I remember being, yeah, I was like very enamored with it at that age. I can't remember how old I was, probably about like 9 or 10. And I was just like, oh wow, like this is, you know, like so strange and interesting. I think the novelty of being able to play a game and like, you know, move around because it's handheld, there's something like very immediate and appealing about that. It feels like very personal. It's kind of like being able to take a book with you somewhere. So there was like an immersion there that spoke to me. So I think, yeah, I've definitely been interested in retro gaming, I guess, like kind of like since then, and, you know, always was sort of playing games on emulators and things like that. I've never been super interested in like AAA graphics, ray tracing, like the most modern game that's ever been made, like hyper-realistic VR stuff. You know, I'm luckily my kind of taste lines up really well with my skill level in that sense, because I can, you know, make a kind of crappy looking retro game. It's sort of like within the realm of my capabilities. So yeah, there's a lucky kind of correlation.
Yeah, I kind of I definitely understand what you mean about the power of the portability of handheld. I just recently picked up a 3DS, or I guess a 2DS XL for the first time,
and it's nice.
Kind of like the strong nostalgia vibes of the, as you described, intimacy that you get with those sorts of platforms versus having to play it on a big, massive gaming PC or a big, massive, maybe not big, massive, but like a TV screen nonetheless. I think it really fits the vibe of this platform well. So you've mentioned that this was kind of a solo project on your end that you then kind of like brought other people into. How have you gone about kind of like taking this on your own for the bulk of the project?
Yeah, I mean, we're in an interesting position because we as in my team, pretty much everyone has like a day job, let's either, you know, full-time or almost full-time, totally unrelated to games. So that's, it's meant that like, you know, progress on any of our projects can be challenging. And having more people working on something doesn't necessarily always mean it goes faster as well. So part of the process for me with this was like, okay, well, can I strip away all of the things that I'm not confident about and push those to the side and then finish everything that I feel like is sort of within my skill set and then bring other people in at that point, instead of having that kind of like too many cooks in the kitchen situation where your progress is slowed down by not necessarily bureaucracy, but something bureaucratically adjacent. So I was like, okay, sweet. Well, let's kind of speed run this thing. I'll write a script, you know, relatively quickly, and then I'll kind of work on this game as a side project over, you know, about 10 months or something, and kind of just learn how to use this. GB Studio is what it's made in, which is kind of like a quite accessible piece of software for making Game Boy games. It does allow you to kind of do quite a lot without having to get into the coding side of things, which is very much a double-edged sword, but if you're trying to get stuff done kind of quickly, it's great. Yeah, so I found that process of kind of working with a more like intuitive app to make the game, and then these kind of really strict graphical limitations with the sort of like screen resolution, the amount of colors that you can have, things like that, that the Game Boy, you know, the Game Boy wasn't, there was a lot of like making sure that things would work and finessing things to get them to kind of like fit within the specifications of what it can display. So more work and less work to do that. But ultimately, it had a lot more like enclosed parameters than working in, say, like Unity or Unreal and having just infinite possibilities.
And I think that kind of that approach that you've taken with this title, as opposed to something like Shelf Life, is the, I guess, just like speed of it as a project that's kind of like, we just need to have something out so people can understand the sort of mahi that we do and the sort of work that we create whilst we work on the big, massive, long-term projects. Has that kind of like been the goal for you, and have you seen any returns on that in the sense of like proving yourself in the Aotearoa and really international games industry?
Yeah, it's been really good. I think it's quite demoralizing as a creator if you've been working on something that's unreleased for a really long time, and you don't have kind of like anything out there for people to really sink their teeth into. It doesn't, if you're already prone to imposter syndrome, it really like doesn't bode well for you. You start to feel like you're kind of like running some weird grift. So I think, yeah, being able to put something out, it was really exciting. The reception was good. I think it was always a little bit unproven whether there was a space for these queer focused nostalgia laden narrative games that we are so interested in. I kind of hoped there was, and I sort of felt like that was true. But you know, it's one thing to kind of like have a hunch and another thing to put it out there and get a positive reception. So yeah, we were really pleased to put it up on itch.io to start with, and then was able to submit it to Pride at Play, which is like a curated exhibition of queer games across Oceania and Asia Pacific. And it's had two showings in that exhibition, one in Sydney and one coming up next month in Melbourne. So that was like, ooh, okay, like, geez, you know, achievement unlocked kind of stuff. It was really good. And then we were approached to put it into the 2023 Queer Games Bundle, which is kind of like an initiative for raising funds and awareness for queer creators on itch.io. So yeah, that was quite exciting. It's kind of, I mean, a lot of people participate in the Queer Games Bundle, and it's something that I'd like seen around before and never really imagined that we'd be able to get something into that unless, you know, we'd been producing content for like several years and had a bunch of stuff out. So yeah, I think there's something to be said for putting something out there before you feel like you're ready. I guess kind of like, you know, bungee jumping, just like go for it. And hopefully you'll find that there is a, you know, a safety net or a tether attached to you and you're like, oh, okay, this wasn't so bad. Mm. Maybe it's more like jumping in a pool or something. I don't know. There's some kind of metaphor is for what it was that was less terrible than I expected.
Yeah, surely. And yeah, I think that is really kind of what's most special about this game and the mahi that you guys have been doing is the kind of focus on queer narratives, especially within small town Aotearoa, because I think despite the fact that it's on the surface seen as quite a niche topic, there are many people out there like yourself and honestly like myself who have experience with that sort of things that are portrayed in these games. And it's, I don't know, it's just interesting to see this work come out of New Zealand, where it's not always been the best for queer people in small town Aotearoa, and it's definitely not always been the best on the other side of things. I was about to finish that sentence of like, it's not always been best for gamers, and comparing it.
Those poor gamers.
But like, in the very corporate sense of like how serious that industry is taken within New Zealand, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's interesting to see these sorts of spaces come about for queer folks who are just like nerds who are into cool games like this. Yeah, and it's like, I guess, is that really why you've started FNAF games in general, and how do you plan to kind of like keep going through that with the still quite niche topic of queer narrative?
I guess so. I suppose like I've always been a repressed gamer, like you implied before. No, I think, yeah, I definitely, I was always like talking about game ideas with my friends like growing up. So I was always very interested in that. And I knew that I was like queer from a young age too, even if I didn't like have the right words for it or like a complete contextual understanding of what that meant. So I definitely kind of always wanted to get into this space. I remember I took like a programming class for like a holiday program at Science Alive back in the day, and I was really, really bad at it. And it like totally put me off, you know, the possibility that I'd even be able to make a game actually at like, I don't know, 13 years old or something. I was like, oh no. I'm too dumb.
Or those formative experiences that just destroy the rest of your life.
Absolutely. It was devastating. But so my pathway here was kind of like through fine arts and design. And then, like I mentioned before, kind of like going out on a limb and applying for some R&D funding once I had a group of collaborators who I felt, you know, that we'd be able to like learn and grow together with it. But yeah, the reason for like getting into it definitely comes from a sense of like, if not being disenfranchised, at least being not catered for. You know, I remember like certainly the vast majority of games I ever played as an adolescent did not have any kind of queer themes or positive queer themes. If there were, you know, the closest that you would get is probably some kind of queer-coded villain character who's sort of despised by like all of the cast, who, you know, you as a kid are like, oh no, like I liked that character. Why does everyone, you know, hate this very camp villain or whatever? So, you know, that the sort of the Disney villain problem, I guess you would call it. So yeah, I think that part of wanting to get into this space and be focused on this sort of like particular corner of games and queerness and self-expression and things like that does come from a feeling of like, okay, you know, am I making up for lost time here? I'm kind of trying to think about what games would I have really liked to have played when I was, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16? What would have, you know, given me a more, I don't know, some kind of validation, like maybe some kind of representation, a feeling of like, oh, like, you know, this is for me as well. Like, I don't have to feel like I'm kind of outside the bakery window with my face pressed up against the glass trying to get a scrap of bread. You know, so I think that that's definitely part of it. Other than that, the thing with our team of collaborators is we are all queer, so it's not like I don't think we'll be like, oh, okay, we've made, you know, our quota of queer games, and now we're just gonna make Call of Duty clones after the first like five or six games we put out. I think we'll probably, you know, consistently be playing in this space because there's so much to explore here. There's so much to kind of say and do with this. It is self-expression. I mean, it's exciting to think that there is an audience for it. It feels like there definitely are games with, you know, strong rainbow and queer themes that do pop off and get popular and be, you know, they have there's some financial proof to the pudding of making queer content. But I think even if there wasn't, you know, we wouldn't, I don't know that we'd, I think we'd follow our sort of our interest in self-expression beyond following the market, if that makes sense. Ideally, you get a bit of both, but yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's been so lovely to chat to you and to learn more about your journey and Knife's journey into kind of creating these incredible worlds and just incredible art that I think that we need to see more of across Aotearoa. So the demo for Small Town Emo is out now. Where can people go to give this game a shot?
So it's actually on Steam now. I just put it up. So if you search Small Town Emo on Steam, you can play the demo there. It's free. Otherwise, it's on itch.io, so you can go to knife-games.itch.io/emo, or if you just Google Small Town Emo, it's like the first several many results are for this. So yeah,
always
relatively
little,
easy.
Yeah, always get a little ego boost when your projects end up being at the top of the what is it, like SAA search results or whatever it is.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this has really good SEO. Shelf Life has really bad SEO because it's also like a shoe company, and it's also like when food expires. That was dumb. Whoops.
That's the final piece of like creative advice that we can give. Just like make sure they have good SEO rating.
Yeah, Google the name of your project and really have a look around. Highly recommend.
Awesome. And how far off can we expect the final game to come out?
I'm expecting it to come out towards the end of this year. That's the promises that I've made. I guess I've got to be held to that. It's all kind of like half done. It's just in a bit of a state. So, you know, the next portion of it just needs to be, massaged into, you know, a way that will be acceptable to be seen by human eyes, and then we'll put it out.
Awesome. Well, it's been so lovely to chat here. I'm so excited for Small Town Emo, Shelf Life, and all the other work that FNAF has coming up. Yeah, do you have anything else that you want our listeners to know? Anywhere that they can follow you to see more of your work?
Yeah, I guess you're not really meant to say, hey, follow us on Twitter anymore.
You can absolutely kind of say like... follow us on Twitter and Instagram. That is what I am suggesting.
Yeah, I think go for it. We're FNAF Games on Twitter and Instagram, and also Tumblr, I want to say. Well, not that we use it that much, but it is there.
Let's bring Tumblr back. All parts of late 2000s.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to get a bit more into it. And one more thing to keep an eye out for, not next month, but the month after, Mid-Boss are having Season of Pride, which is like a month-long LGBTQIA+ streamer event. And that's supporting a whole lot of queer charities like the Trevor Project and Trans Lifeline and Mermaids and stuff internationally. So if you look up seasonofpride.tv, you should, you know, queue in for that, watch some of those streams, do some donations. Our game might be featured on that too. I'm excited and scared to watch streamers play it. It's going to be very embarrassing probably, but also cool.
We'll be sure to tune in. Awesome. Thank you so much, Thomas. It's been so lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was really fun and only a little bit scary.
Classic.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.